Hello, mobilizers. You're listening to Mission Possible. I'm Sheila Murphy, Chief Mobilizer for Mission to Mobilization, focused on changing perception for returning citizens, and that is 4.5 million of our brothers and sisters living in this country. We are talking to some of them. We see their strengths and character. We share their success stories and talk about the amazing things they have gone through and doing to positively impact our communities. You also will be inspired by Coach Nate's battle plan as this author and speaker encourages us to live our best life right now. This week's Mission Possible guest is Miss Gaveta Smith. Most folks that know her call her Vay, and this returning citizen Wonder Woman is amazing, and I cannot wait for you to hear her story and her work. They has a good and tough start. She can explain that. But now this author of Get Yourself Together First, motivational speaker, mime, teacher, and administrator is showing us that the mission truly is possible for those individuals post-incarceration. I don't want to waste any more time. Please help me welcome to the show, Gaveta Smith. Hello, my dear sister.
Hello. Thank you for having me on your show. I am honored, and I find it a privilege to be able to encourage or help anyone that is in contact with, or who, if you are a returning citizen or you're in contact with returning citizens, or you still know somebody or have someone in your family close to you incarcerated, coming home, I just find it a blessing. I'm sure that something I will speak about will meet you in some sort of way, even if you live in a neighborhood where people are in and out of incarceration. I'm just hoping and praying that I am able to say something that will let you know how to help somebody or help yourself just a little bit more.
I agree. Thank you so much. I want you to get us started. Please just help our listeners kind of skip through your story, you know, where you grew up, some of the challenges, anything that's kind of significant about your time in and out, and then just, you know, whatever's on your heart. Let's just start there.
Okay, I was raised in Washington, D.C., born and raised, been here my whole life. I was raised in a privileged family. My grandfather was the late Bishop Walter Sweet Daddy McCullough. A lot of people know the House of Prayer by going there to get dinners and down at the House of Prayer kitchen, but there are 156 United Houses of Prayers in 23 states all throughout the United States. That was the home I was raised in because my mother was an addict. So I was raised very privileged. I would say parents, grandparents, we got to be careful how we raise people because they become used to that. And that may, where you think it's a good thing, it may lead them somewhere else down the line, which is pretty much what happened to me. My grandfather died in 91. By the end of 91, I was a pregnant teenager. And I just knew that I didn't want to become an addict like my mother. I wanted to finish school, but the money just did not add up. So by the age of 18, I started writing bad checks and committing what we know as white collar offenses. I knew that I didn't want to do anything crazy, but there was a certain lifestyle that I was used to my whole life. In some kind of twisted way, I was determined to keep it up.
Wow.
When you are a white collar offender in most jurisdictions, you are slapped on the hand, 30 days here, no probation here, no jail here. So you really don't take it seriously, especially at a certain age. And then you get older and your criminal record starts looking like a wedding train. Mm. Then what happens is one jurisdiction, you meet one that is just tired of you and they give you serious time behind of it, which is what happened to me. So I wound up in Montgomery County, we're bouncing throughout the Maryland system, and wound up between Maryland and D.C. with having a sentence of almost 20 years in totality. I wound up doing 9 years, and I've been home a year and a half.
Okay.
That's pretty much where I was in the beginning of my incarceration. I guess I did like most people do. They have a sense of loneliness, or if they're worried about commissary funds and those kind of things. But then there comes a period of settling in where you have to realize that, no, this is the reality of where I am. So you have to then ask yourself, what are you going to do with that time? And I remember getting to Augustine, West Virginia federal prison, and they told me, from the day you walk in here, you plan for your release. I don't care if you have 1 year or you have 20 years. So I did 2 years in Augustine and my last 7 years in Jessup, Maryland, in the Maryland state system. That is what I did. So while I was incarcerated, I wrote everybody I could possibly think of, from the credit bureaus to the ticket places to the courts that had judgments against me, working on cleaning my credit up and things like that. And then I started finding myself. Sometimes when you're incarcerated, you wind up finding that your family or your friends, people that you thought was going to visit and be there for you, they aren't there for you as much. So some women and men likewise find themselves incarcerated, and what they'll start to do is they will find other vices like same-sex relationships, drugs, or they'll throw themselves into law, or they'll throw themselves into grieving everything in the system and start doing grievances, or they'll get into very heavily endowed into their religious sector. Some people go to college. So it just depends on what your thing is. And I'll talk a little bit later about how that impacts the whole scenario of who you become once you get out. Okay. So like I said, I've been out a year and a half. The things that are really on my heart to talk about is transparency of who you are once you come home, the people that you want to be there for you, that you need there for you in your life, how to find a job, what employers should be asking other than what were you locked up for, and how to sort of prepare yourself for what may come. You have to look at your incarceration as a tool. And when I say as a tool, I'm talking about when you come home and the door is slammed in your face. Remember when the cell door was slammed in your face, and change your perspective. Be grateful that you're on the outside to deal with it now. So those are kind of the things that I wanted to like open up talking about.
Okay.
Once I came home, my baby girl, she was 21 when I got home. I made the mistake, like most of us make, we want to go and jump right into family. We are ill-equipped and we are not emotionally stable, even though we're excited, to try to take on all that we want to take on. And I'm talking about parenting, being a grandmother. I'm even talking about trying to parent the ones that are 20 and 30 years old.
Right.
We cannot do it. Our feelings will get hurt. And that is a guarantee. Your feelings will get hurt.
Okay. Tell me what you mean by that.
Because for me, so I thought that I was living with my daughter. I'll help get the children to school. I'll do whatever you ask. I'm home. I'm here. I'm your mother. And the minute, because you're so anxious to appease that first 30 and 60 days, when reality sinks in and you have all of these things set up from your probation officer, you have to be at your urines, you have to see me on time, you have to be your job on time, then you can't meet the obligations of the things that you've already promised your family. So now you become a disappointment to your child or whoever you've made those promises to again. And I don't care, in or out of church, they will raise up and cuss you out. And tell you how they really feel about you. And things begin to spiral out of control. So now your feelings is hurt again. You want to restore that relationship. You can't find balance. But the only thing you're sure of more than anything is that you don't want to go back to jail.
Right, right.
And this is why we all need a mentor. You need somebody that is not blood related to you, that you can tell the honest truth. I don't care if your truth is, I have had nowhere to live and I've slept with a different man every week and your mentor is a pastor. Find somebody that you can be honest with so that they can help you. They can give you advice. They can give you tools. They can give you connections. They can pray for you authentically and genuinely. Find somebody that you can just be totally and completely honest with, because if you do not have that, you will find yourself by yourself trying to figure out everything through your head and through your confusion.
Well, how do you believe or feel what is going to be the right approach for those family relationships? Because there is an expectation that you do all of the requirements based on, you know, your release, but then there's also requirements for you living anywhere. No matter where you live, there's going to be some expectation. So,
yeah. Absolutely. So this is the thing. My mentor for me, she was a teacher down Jessup, and I kind of clung to her before I got out. And the reason I clung to her, because she said something that changed my life as a student. We weren't even close. Okay. But as her sitting under her, she said some things that changed my life forever. One thing she told me is that we put expectations on people that they never promise. And that meant when you got home, you expected somebody to have money saved for you. You expected whoever told you they was going to buy you your iPhone, it wasn't there. The clothes wasn't there. And now you find yourself in thrift stores, Ross and Marshalls, but you thought you was going to have Nike and Gucci.
Okay.
That's not the case. So you put these expectations there. So then I can't remember the preacher that wrote the book, not a fan, a follower, a fan of Jesus, but a fan. But he said that you have got to, he called it DTR, define the relationship.
Okay.
So as much as you're in need, probably before you got out, and if you haven't done it, find it if there's somebody, a family member, your mother, your sister, your brother, your significant other, go out to dinner, have a nice, relaxed setting, and say, this is what I expect in this relationship.
That's good.
When my mentor sat down with me, she met with me within 3 days of being home and said, what do you expect from me as your mentor? I don't have to be your mentor to get you in our clothing closet, food, and things like that. But as your mentor, what do you expect from me?
Okay. That's good. That's
so really you have to define these relationships.
Okay.
Once you define your relationship, do not deviate from what you have defined, your expectation. Do not let your need change your expectation.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I mean.
Which that can be hard sometimes, right?
My daughter is since eventually put me out for her boyfriend to come live there. So I had another mentor. She put me in a hotel for a week, and then my pastor put me in a hotel for 2 months. My mentor, my regular mentor, was in Spain or Germany somewhere visiting her daughter in the military for 3 months. So I was on my own. This is when I knew God stepped in.
Okay.
My bishop did not know me from a can of paint, but he said, let me help you, and he put me in a hotel. So I was blessed. And as I began to talk to him and heard him talk to other people about me, he said, that girl came in here on New Year's Eve and sat in that seat, and she ain't moved since. My consistency. He knew it. And I'm thinking, this church got 1,000 people in it.
Right.
How do you know who I am?
Mm.
He said, I know where you sit. Mm. And so that lets you know somebody is watching.
Right.
Somebody is watching. So what happened was, when my daughter put me out, nobody in my family, not even my own mother, opened her door to me, which broke my heart. Because in my mind, jumping back, wait a minute, most of these crimes I committed, I made sure you had big screen TVs, your homestead deductions, I done forged documents for, you know, you're thinking about everything that you've done to help everybody else.
Right.
So now you're looking like, what? Mm-hmm. Nobody's helping me. And so then after I got my place moving forward, everybody started calling again. Can you help me with this? And I said to my mother, I'm not mad about the situation because I didn't even ask you to come live with you. But I am going to say this to you. You do not get to call me only when you need something. We're either going to have a relationship or we're not, because what you're doing to me is how men have treated me.
Right. That was good.
And so I had to say
that relationship.
It. Mm-hmm. I had to say it and stand on it, because the expectation was that I would come home and go back to my family's church. If you come back to the house of prayer, this person gonna be there for you. You'll have this, you'll have that. But God had given me a different assignment, and I knew that I was bound in religion at that church instead of a relationship with Christ. So was I going to abort my destiny because of my immediate needs? Or was I going to suffer for Christ and trust him to take care of me? So this is where my faith kicked in.
Wow, you know, that's so good. And it's amazing that you felt the presence of God and knew that you needed to stand on what you believed was your destiny and what was your what your purpose was. You know, I want you to talk a little bit about the employer piece, because you mentioned before when we had spoken the other day, you talked about the expectations from employers and that relationship between employers and returning citizens.
So, okay, first of all, to any employers that are considering or even not considering hiring ex-offenders, the first thing is you get a tax write-off. Hire them.
Right.
You get a tax write-off. The second thing is I would say there is a series of questions that you will ask anybody that you're interviewing. So one thing I would ask that you ask the offender is, what did you do while you were in prison? Or what impacted you while you were in prison? Do not let that person give you a list of the certificates they did. Allow them to tell you about an experience that changed them or moved them or impacted them. This is when you will learn the heart and hear the heart of the person you're dealing with.
Wait one second. Isn't it against the law for the employer to ask that level of detail?
No, because you're asking, it will be the same thing as asking on your previous job, mm-hmm. tell me about a time when you didn't whatever.
Okay.
Or you did. So I'm not talking about your crime or your record.
Okay.
I'm talking about an experience.
Okay.
We're talking about a life experience.
Okay.
You can hear the heart, and I'll give you an example. If someone was to ask me that, I would say, this older lady just asked me to teach a class one day, and I was afraid. And she said it was something that she saw in me, and so I tried it. What that shows the employer is that I'm willing to try new things and just do what is instructed of me by somebody who may have more wisdom.
Right.
And then from that, I wound up in another class, and the chaplain was the teacher, and I wound up facilitating that class for 4 years.
Hmm.
What that now shows the employer is my consistency.
Okay. So being able
to... So I'm talking about those kind of experiences.
That's good.
And so that could be a question that an employer posed to a returning citizen. As far as the returning citizens, listen, ladies and gentlemen, at some point in your life, you were single and you dated. And just like you found a niche and a thing to say to sell yourself to whoever you really liked, it's the same way you find something amazing about yourself to sell to the employer. You find something that you have that everybody in the company may not necessarily be able to offer. I'll give you an example. One time I told an employer, I took a stack of my probation officer business cards, and I told my employer, here's my PO's card. And of course, the employer looked like, why do you want me to have this? And I said, because your company has bylaws and regulations how you must discipline employees for missing money out the cash register or hanging on their phones or hanging on the internet or taking too many breaks. With me, you call that number, and I'm going back to jail. My mess ups, you don't even have to follow regular criteria for. I have a disciplinarian that will send me back to jail.
Wow.
The employers felt secure at, wow, this person is going to give me their all. The rest of these people might walk out the door today or tomorrow. But this person is sad enough, too afraid to mess up, so they're going to give me their all.
Wow.
So you have to find things like that.
Kind of creative ways.
Creative way. Even in finding a job, like I don't look for jobs on, what is it called, Indeed and Career Builder, because everybody looks for jobs in those places. I go on LinkedIn and put in whatever my search criteria is, and I find the HR directors of whatever companies I want to work for on LinkedIn and send my resumes in, quote unquote, their DM on LinkedIn, because it gives you a backdoor way of saying, hey, I'm looking for it. You ain't going through no application process. The job I have now, I've been on a year, never fill out the application.
Wow.
Never sent my resume through LinkedIn. Never filled out an application.
That's amazing. I love
it. And you would be surprised, the companies who pay a lot don't make you fill out applications. Most of them, they want your resume, and then you have to fill out all of the, of course, state law required documents once you get there for your, as you, if you're being hired. But no, you don't.
I love it. I love it. I love it. And I love the innovative approach that you have just to life, just always kind of looking for how you can do something differently and how that really has made a difference. It's showing people that, you know, whatever your mission is, it is possible. You can do really all things through Christ that strengthens you and the wisdom that he's given you to be able to do it.
And that's the thing that does not cost. We can pray for wisdom. You ain't got to be a perfect Christian
right.
to pray for wisdom. That's something, that's one of God's promises to us. But I want to say to returning citizens and if anybody helping them, use the resources that are out there. Like I went to your workshop on Saturday, and so I started talking to a couple of guys I know that are that have been through the system, and they were like, no, that's what I went through too.
Yeah.
So I say all of that to say, the same way your PO lean on you, lean on them. Lean on, let them know, I don't have any money. I don't have transportation. Can you give me a bus pass? Can you find me, tell me where I can go to get some bus passes? Let them give you referrals. I'm having challenges getting me an ID. I need some help. Let them begin to help you, because this is what happens with this. Last year, I went and spoke at a CSOSA, which is DC Court Services probation event, and I was talking about the relationship between my probation officer and I, and how when my perspective was so bitter that I didn't want to be bothered with the system because probably I wasn't doing everything I was supposed to be doing right. I had everything negative to say about these POs and that they were overbearing. But now that I live my life legal, I email my PO everything I do. They are tired of hearing from me.
Hmm.
They I don't even go as much as everybody else go. Why? Because, oh, I'm doing this. Oh, I need to go to North Carolina this week. And, oh, I'm doing this. And they let me because they know they're going to hear from me.
Right, right.
And so I went and said, I need an ID and I don't have whatever DC was charging at the time, $30, $35. They gave me a referral. All of my information was on it with a court seal from CSOSA, and I took it to DMV and didn't have any problems getting my identification and anything else I needed. And so, but the problem is people don't know that these things are available.
And I think something that you said earlier, too, about preparing for your return. You know, that's critical, really looking at the resources that are available even, you know, pre-release and knowing, okay, these are some different things I need to do. And then networking. It's so critical that you're talking to people and outside of the people maybe that you normally have a relationship with on the outside and seeing who else do I know that can help expand my network of folks, my reach, so that I can find out, you know, what are the things that I need and what do I have access to when I get out.
Absolutely. Jessup has a reentry conference that they run every year. And so the people that are within a year of release are able to come there. And then it's kind of set up like a job fair. So they're able to get business cards. Some people go and sit on the information. I used to go knowing I wasn't getting out no time soon and volunteer to clean up during the event just so that I could be a part of the conference and get all the business cards. And I would write these people until I got out. And these people, I developed a book of email addresses and regular address people to worry.
Right.
and that's what you have to do. And do you know what it looks like, even if you're incarcerated, do you know what it looks like to a parole board if you can actually show copies or responses of places that you've been writing, preparing for your release?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just saying, I wrote this place, even if it's a rejection letter, we can't help you, see us when you get out, or whatever it is, it shows that you decided to invest, a stamp every week, 50 cents a week in your release.
Right, you put some work in.
You put some work in.
Yes, yes.
And if I can for a minute, I just want to go back to what I was talking about as far as people trying, make sure another thing JESSUP has, let me say this. They have a mediation program. And what that is for is within 2 or 3 years of your release, you can have mediation sessions with the family members that you're either going to live with or that you have hurt to try to merge and bridge that gap. There's a mediator in the room that does not intervene unless you need them to, but it lets you have some conversation, not in a visiting room setting, in a private setting. If it needs, you can have up to, I think, three family members. And it's called the, I think, Results Resolution Center, Mediation Center. But they come in with inmates and they'll set it up with the families and say, hey, these people want to have a conversation with you before they get out. I think it's so important because our feelings will take us back to prison.
Hmm.
Our feelings, our broken hearts. I'm very strong in my faith. So I tell everybody I came home with an Abrahamic spirit. And what that meant for me was I'm okay with leaving my whole family behind if it's not in alignment with my purpose, my goals, and who God has called me to be.
Amen.
And I believe being isolated in prison for 9 years allowed me to be able to say, I don't need to talk to you. It sounds arrogant, but it's healthy when you got people on the phone still asking you to do things that you used to do. Can you make me a pay stub? Can you do this? Even though anybody going to jail for making nobody no pay stub, I can't do that because it's not in alignment with who I am today.
Right. Right. That's good.
I blocked my son for the 60 days after I came home because he does now what I used to do, or he was in that life. I don't want to talk about criminal activity. And he thought it was funny, so I blocked him for 2 months.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I mean,
because my mental and emotional health was first.
That's right. That's right. Beautiful.
And so we have got to be careful about not getting caught up in snares of wanting to go back to, or wanting to, having that need for your family so much. And I guess it goes to my next point. I wrote a book called, while I was incarcerated, I didn't get it published till August of last year. It's called Get Yourself Together First. And what the book is about is everything that I endured during her 24 years of crack addiction. And it's very transparent, but there's no vulgarity, no cursing. I sell it throughout churches. In fact, I got 2 Barnes & Noble's book signings coming up. On the 17th of August, I'll be in Columbia Mall in Maryland. And on the 24th of August, I will be in Francis Scott Key Mall in Frederick, Maryland, doing a book signing. But the book serves 3 purposes. It's to encourage addicts to get themselves together first before trying to restore relationships. Get yourself. It was when I saw my mother clean that I was instantly able to forgive her and let her back in my life.
Hmm.
The second point of it is to encourage the children and the family members of addicts that you ain't the only one that been through it. You can forgive. You really can forgive. And the third is to give hope to the caregivers. And when I say children, I'm not even talking about people who may still be teenagers. I'm talking about you could be 50 years old, and if you experienced it, you are a child of an addict. So it's to give hope to the caregivers of children and let them know that don't think that you've done anything wrong that is making this child still want to go around this addictive parent. There is a natural longing for a child to want their mother.
Right.
It's just natural. It's not because you're not feeding them or loving them enough, or you had to spank them last week, or you told them to stop hanging out with some friends. It's not because of that. It is just a natural longing. So you did not fail. It's just what they want. And so I also encourage, like, people who are in the addiction profession to get the book just to see a different perspective on, because the family piece, and for all of us, returning citizens, addicts, there's nothing like having somebody to say, job well done.
Right. Everybody wants that.
Yeah, everybody wants some sort of affirmation. We claim that we don't need nobody, and I guess this is the preachy side of me, but the first thing that God said in the Bible that wasn't good was that it was not good for man to be alone.
Mm-hmm.
So we claim that we're okay alone, but it is not good.
Right. Yes, it's so true. Your story and your encouragement, you're so inspiring. I mean, I love, everything that you have shared, and I know people are going to glean so much from you and from your book as well. And so, where can they pick it up?
So my book is available on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, and Walmart websites. It's also available on iBook, Nook, and Kindle. The name of the book is Get Yourself Together First, and it is simply published under my first name, Gavata, Gavata. You can also go to my website, www.gavata.org, and all of the links are there. Also, there are links to all the other things I do: public speaking, miming. I'm vice president of my church's mime ministry. That's another gift that God imparted in me while I was incarcerated. I go and mime at different churches all over the D.C., Maryland, and Virginia area. It's a passion of mine. It's just something I love to do.
Beautiful. You're busy,
I'm
busy
on
lady.
Facebook, Instagram. I don't really check my Twitter, but Facebook and Instagram mostly. But I'm on all the social media sites, and I'm not just a Sunday church goer. I am in Calvary Bible Institute. I'm enrolled in Calvary Leadership Academy. My next step would be going to Lancaster Bible College to get my degree in ministry. And I'm already co-facilitating the class, preparing for Christian ministry. Bishop Owens, I set up under him for a year in homiletics class to develop my gift of preaching and doing it the proper way. So I'm just excited about life and all that God is doing. It does not mean that my life is perfect. It does not mean that I don't have challenges. We all have challenges, but there's something about waking up in the morning and doing the right thing, or going to sleep at night and knowing the police is not banging on your door because you've done the right thing.
Right. That it's so true. That's peace. You can have peace, peace of mind.
Yes,
Amen.
peace that passes
All
all understanding.
understanding. That's right. This has been rich, and I want to give you just one final time. You said so much, but I want to give you an opportunity to give a last word to our community. What you would want our community to know, if they may be a skeptic, they could, about returning citizens, or they're unsure. There's people that are all over, on both sides of the fence on criminal justice reform and the issues. But what would you say to our community in terms of something positive regarding second chances for returning citizens in this country?
So I will say, first of all, know that we are people. We've made mistakes, but we are not a mistake. A judge in Montgomery County once told me that he believes that there are very bad people in the world. He believes people get caught up in bad situations and make bad decisions. Most people who work with people in the criminal justice system by now realize that they were one mistake away from being in the same situation. So that gives them a heart and a passion for it. I would say to you that the Uber rider, the Lyft rider, the person that's serving your food, the person that's cooking your food in a fine restaurant could very well be an ex-offender. And if you are so trusting there, why not let somebody be honest about who they are with you and trust them that way? Don't shut out somebody that's being honest about their mistakes and trying to move forward.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, I just want to thank you so much for your time today and for all that you are doing. And I'm looking forward to seeing you, all over the place, and all the ways that you will have a ripple effect in the lives of the people that you will touch through all the things that God has gifted you to do. So just thank you again. God bless you. And
Thank you so much. Thank you so
you're
much.
welcome, you're welcome. Okay, I will talk to you soon. Okay,
All right.
okay we're gonna
God bless.
God
God
bless.
bless everyone.
Bye bye. Bye
bye.
They mentioned so many key points today. A theme I kept hearing was about planning. Pre-release, she planned. She did a DTR, determined the relationship, a plan. She focused her purpose, goals, and destiny. Plan, plan, planning. I love it. Her mission is possible and being realized as she couples her plan with the wisdom of God. Simply beautiful. She couldn't have set us up any better for this week's battle plan with Coach Nate. Nate?
Hey, human. Coach Nate here with today's battle plan. At the risk of stating the obvious, in this life we are going to have problems. Sometimes you may experience a problem or two. You may experience many. Sometimes they may be small. Sometimes they could be overwhelming, great, life-changing, life-altering. In life, it's not what happens to us, but it's how we respond to it. It was Duke Ellington that stated it, and that is, a problem is a chance for you to do your best. Problems are an opportunity for us to demonstrate, show our character, who we are. It's a fact that we're going to face them, whether we're doing good or not. Many times, the better you try to be, the more of a positive impact you try to make, the more problems you face. It's just a fact of life. It's what occurs. But it's in how you approach and deal with. They say there's a solution for everything. It may not be the solution that you want, may not be the solution that you desire, but there is a solution. So you can let problems set you back, prevent you, stop you, steal your joy, your will, your desire to make a meaningful impact, or you can say, this is an opportunity for me to show and demonstrate my true value, my true worth. It's those things that we do in private that really define our character. Facing and overcoming and addressing problems, not letting them overcome and defeat us, are one of those opportunities to do our best, to be our best. And sometimes we work those things out in private, not necessarily in the public light. And that builds character, and that builds strength and confidence, and helps you be the better person that you are and that you know yourself to be. So the next time you face a problem, face it head on. Run towards your Goliath. It's an opportunity for you to do and be your best. Until next time, this is Coach Nate. Live your best life on purpose. Now.
Thanks, Coach. Everyone needs support. I don't care who you are. You need someone rooting for you, supporting you, and directing you to tools that impact your success. Your faith community or employer is missing out on opportunities to serve or tap a talent pool incentivized to help them grow their business while sustaining the return to citizens' life. If you are not listed as a returning citizen-friendly congregation or employer, see if you meet the criteria. It's easy. Visit our site and see. This week's proverb says, without wise guidance, a nation falls, but victory is certain when there are plenty of wise counselors. It's simple. As we help each other, each one, reach one, impacting a nation of people right where you have influence. This is Mission Possible, and I'm Sheila Murphy. We are changing the way the nation sees returning citizens. Visit missiontomobilization.com to check out our work, and visit natebattle.com for today's battle plan. Until next time,
create your battle plan
and make your mission possible.